Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for November 19th, 2007, and on this episode we have an interview with Eric Rosen. He will be talking to Tom Williams about his recent decision to become the artistic director of Kansas City Repertory Theater. Also, of course, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago! And let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest this week is a man who is a playwright, director of tremendous esteem, an artistic director, and one of the most creative people in Chicago. Say hello to Eric Rosen. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Tom.
Tell us about the magnificent play you have going at the Steppenwolf Garage Theater, Wedding Play. I just thought it was one of the most unique pieces of theater that I've seen in many years.
Well, thanks, Tom. It's the play's called Wedding Play, and it is a play I've been working on for about the last 3 years or the last 15, depending on how you count. I first had the idea to write it about 15 years ago. There's a book called Wedding Song that is a novel by an Egyptian writer called Naguib Mahfouz that is about a theater company in the 30s in Cairo that puts on a play in which a playwright confesses to a murder of his wife and child. And I tried to write an adaptation of it years and years ago, and I put it away. It wasn't very good. And about 3 years ago, something happened in my own life. My baby sister was had a stem cell transplant and was in the hospital for about 6 months. And that experience really prompted me to write this play about a playwright who's suffering with a family member who's, in the case of my play, mysteriously died, and writes a play in which he seems to confess to something secret. And everyone believes that he's written a play that in which he confesses to her murder and the murder of their baby. And I sort of spun it out as a play about different points of view, different perspectives, and how in the theater we always take the play to be the truth, and we're always trying to figure out what the autobiography is, and that's sort of the mystery I've set up for myself in Wedding Play.
Well, you did some unique things too. I love the idea of setting it in Chicago. So there's some autobiographical elements in this, I think, that kind of sneaks out, right?
Yeah, you know, depending on who knows me and who sees it, some people think there are two different characters that people think are based on me, and there are characters that people think are based on other people in Chicago, and people that I've gone out with think the characters are based on them, you know. And in a way, it's part of the point of what I was trying to do, is really ask, you know, what is autobiography and why do we write? You know, how in ways all writing confession, whether or not we're telling the truth or whether or not we're creating to heal some wound, you know? So in a way it's all autobiographical.
Well, but setting it with a Chicago theater company is kind of a unique.
It is a theater company very much like our own. And it's the center of it is a writer and director sort of like me, and his situation is sort of like mine. And so it's definitely, there are definitely reflections, and I was drawing on a lot of my own experience.
How did you feel about writing? I know there are certain taboos. I think you have the experience level to overcome this, but generally you wouldn't recommend a young writer writes his own play and then directs it.
No, I don't know that I would do it again. I just don't know how else to do it. I mean, in the play, a lot of the storytelling is very visual and very complicated. I mean, there's lots of shifts around in time and shifts around in place, and lots of seeing the same thing over and over again from different points of view. And to me, that's all visual in how I think about it. So I had to direct it because I had to tell the story. I knew how I wanted to do it even as I wrote it. So there are kind of techniques or tricks in the storytelling where we see one scene from a play within a play as the audience, and then I actually inverted 180 degrees and we see it from behind.
Yeah, that was quite clever.
And so that was an early idea of like how to create the felt experience of what I imagine in my head. If what I'm seeing in my head are visual images, I have to kind of direct them to make them real.
And I think you really made that work. Again, you have the experience and the knowledge. I mean, this is not your first play, so that.
No.
But in general, that's one of the taboos you kind of got away with.
I mean, it definitely is. It's not for the faint-hearted, you know. It was a very challenging experience, but it was really thrilling. I mean, it's one of the things I'm most proud of that I've done.
Well, I've seen most of your work, and I would rank that up there.
Thank you.
Because, you know, mysteries are very hard to do.
Yeah.
On stage.
Yeah.
And then using flashbacks and changing of time can really confuse audiences if they're not done right. And this, I had no problem with it. It was seamless. I mean, a lot of it was your staging and the pacing, but also a lot of it contributed to the casting, to the actors.
Oh yeah, what a cast! I mean, they're really a dream team, and you know, it's such a great Chicago story, the making of this play, because those people, you know, you've got like Joe Dempsey and Craig Spidel and Leslie Bevan and Sean Cooper, and really like major heavy hitters in the industry, and they all, you know, they're working for almost nothing. They're killing themselves to make this, and we workshopped it for weeks and weeks and weeks. Some of them worked on it for 3 years. Joe Dempsey has been with the project since the first workshop 3 years ago, and they're, you know, they give so much of themselves to really help write it. You know, I wrote every word for those actors.
Well, the truth of that was, I mean, you as this famous national director, you created kind of a salty director character there.
Yes.
I mean, he wants fame at any cost, doesn't he?
Yeah. Though, I mean, I have to tell you, that's a part that people thought, you know, oh, that's, you know, there are jokes that I make about myself in it that I, that character in a monologue says, do you know that I know 5 Tony Award winners personally?
Right.
And I actually found myself saying that one time, and I heard myself say it, and I was like, oh God, what am I doing? That's horrible.
Well, you do. I could name a couple. I mean, you know, Galati, Mary Zimmerman, that's 2.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we have a lot of those kind of people working at the theater, and then I just sounded so grotesque when I said it. I was like, oh, I have to write that down. That's really funny. So, you know, in a way, the kind of, you know, poking fun of myself and not trying to take myself too seriously was part of the fun of doing that. But I was also thinking about a really different kind of artistic director. You know, I'm a pretty even keeled, pretty nice guy. And this guy is sort of a monster. You know, he's tearing up the place and screaming at people and throwing stuff and really, you know, fights to get what he wants. So it's an exaggeration of how I see myself, and it really, you know, sort of based on other artistic directors I've worked with and seen in the business.
Well, I wouldn't name any, but I know a few that it could be. And hey, if the shoe fits, right?
I guess, you know.
So let's go on a little bit. I want you to explain as much as you can, set the tone for the play, because people need to get to see this. But obviously, in a mystery, you don't want to give away the surprises, because there are some unique plot twists.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, the play begins at a rehearsal of a play within the play within the play, which is also called Wedding Play. And an actor named Tom Brattle is called in for his first day of rehearsal and sees a scene performed in which he realizes that the scene and the play that is being written is actually about him and his ex-boyfriend, Adam, who is the playwright at the center of the play, and in which he's actually confessing to a murder. And Tom is convinced that that is true. And so the first half of the play is about Tom sort of trying to get the mystery of proving Adam's guilt and proving why this is a confession. He's, you know, the jilted ex-boyfriend. He's also cast as the villain inside the play, which really rubs salt in the wound of his relationship.
Yet it's such a strong play, and his career's at a point where he needs this role.
Yeah, and I had to write characters who were desperate for change. You know, and all the time with the actors, I was saying, you know, if we're going to pull off this very complicated form, it's got to be about change and people who are desperate. You know, that this actor needs this play to be a hit. His career's falling apart. And at the same time, he needs to change the outcome. He can't live with portraying himself as a villain. And so he needs these two competing things. And every character I tried to set up with some essential contradiction. They want fame, but they also want beauty. They want forgiveness, but they also want recognition. You know, they want...
Yeah, and you skillfully did that with going back in time and weaving in the background story and the character development, which at the beginning, you know, I'm saying, well, where's this going? And then I see, you know, oh, okay. And it's one of those, I tell everyone, the first 5 to 10 minutes, stay with it.
Yep.
As you have to do it most great plays.
Yep. It goes fast and furious.
Right. Once you stay with it, it all starts folding in and making sense, and then you start going, aha.
Yeah, and that's really the trick. You know, those first 10 minutes are tricky, because if the audience doesn't hang with it, and I go really fast with it, you know, I want it to be this kind of blur of like, what's going on? Who are these people? What are they fighting about? And that the mystery then unfolds, that if you start with a state of chaos, then you can start to weave the tale
and
try to, you know, what I'm trying to
do. Showing your craft as a storyteller.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I hope
yeah.
so. I feel like that's a pretty, when it works, it feels thrilling.
Well, it is, and I can say that Yeah, is it complicated? Yeah, but can you follow it? Yeah, and when you leave the theater, do you think you've really spent a night with some creative art and with a play that satisfied? You bet.
Oh, thanks, Tom. Yeah. Thanks very much. Thanks.
So let's go on now. So
you're doing the
background, and then there's hints. One of the themes I saw was, is he writing about reality, mm-hmm. or is it his interpretation of reality? That's one of the gray areas,
mm-hmm.
because you go back with his first hit play when he was in mm-hmm. college or right out of college, mm-hmm. and that was kind of based on something that happens with the father and the mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the traits about this character. I was talking to my friend Jessica Thebus about the play, who she helped me a lot with it, and she said the character is like a vulture, the playwright, that he can only succeed when he's writing from personal experience. So this guy, this player, Adam Mace, has this one play called The Stranger that's about the death of his mother, and in which he seems to implicate his father in her murder. Right. And then he tries to write another play in which he doesn't have any tragedy in his own life to write about. And it's a huge disaster. And then when this real tragedy befalls him, he writes this play in which he seems to be confessing to the same kinds of things he did in the first play, The Stranger. So what I wanted to set up for the character is how, in a way, is he only able to mine his own experience to really rip his heart out and put it on stage? That's what motivates that guy.
Because he's a really tortured character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a complicated guy.
Yeah.
And brilliantly portrayed by Sean Cooper.
Yes. I think it's, again, not only is I think it's one of the best plays, I think you're in award territory for some of the performances.
I hope so.
Sean
is so good.
Yeah, they really were.
Yeah. He goes into a really dark place with it. And it's, you know, it's hard, you know, when you're talking about the theater in the theater, what I find challenging is how do we take our lives as seriously as dramatic fodder as we take the lives of the things we're supposed to invent as dramatists, you know, that if we say, like, I'm going to write about Irish countryside living, because it's so imaginary, we take it to be, you know, we can take those lives seriously. And I tried to say, like, no, you know, when I was working with the actors, you know, I thought, no, our lives are serious. What we do is serious. What we do as theater people is serious. And let's make that the center of the play. So Sean's got to build this character out of this feeling of torture, you know, and play a character who is tortured, and watching him sort of transform into something that is so much more dark and complicated than I think I am. It was fascinating.
Yeah, and you see sort of an evil side of him too, that it could be evil, because there is doubt whether or not he really is this villain.
That's one of the things I said to the actors all the time. It's a play in which we have to be concerned that a murder really happened. And in real life, you know, if I walked up to you today, Tom, and said, you know what, I just walked out of my house and I just murdered someone with my bare hands. Even if I had blood on my hands and was was holding a knife, you wouldn't believe it, because it's just not credible that
That's
the people
right,
that we know could commit murder. And I kept saying this to the actors. I was like, we have to believe that it's possible. We have to believe that everyone could believe that a murder took place. And that's really the challenge of that play, is if you go in and you buy that and you believe, you know, that Sean's character is just crazy enough to have done it, then the play, I think, works, you know, and that's what we were going for.
And then I was wondering, well, how is he going to, if there's this doubt, now, how is he going to give us more hints? This is where the father comes in, right?
When
he's watching the play and he's seen the early stuff and he's saying, hey, that's not how it happened. But he realizes he's basing a lot of the writing on events, actual events, but he's, of course, changing them.
Yeah, one of the big plot twists is the playwright's father shows up for the opening night and is sort of manipulatively invited. He's been estranged from his son since the opening of the previous play in which he was implicated in this death, and had gone to jail and comes back and hasn't seen his son in 7 years, and he gets a note inviting him to the opening night, and he goes and he's all excited, and this is very much based on my own dad, how he is at opening nights. You know, he's like, I'm the father, I'm the proud father here. I'm so excited to be here. And then in the second act, we see the play from his point of view and we see it, how he sees it. And he has the dawning realization that his son has done something really awful. So I get to show the play really a third time through from this point of view, from the outside eye of someone who's only there to watch the play and to tell us what it's like, you know, what it means.
But I love the thing where you have all the handwriting on the wall, because
mm-hmm.
he writes, he handwrites.
Yeah, one of the
you can barely read it.
One of the things that's true about the character of Adam, the playwright, is that he writes everything out in longhand, and just his living room is covered in sheets of writing paper, and plot points and everything that he has to say about the play, and he puts it all literally on the wall, which is just a theatrical idea. I don't like that. I don't know anyone who does, but I thought it'd be cool.
Yeah,
to,
it's a nice little twist.
I mean, to literally show the writing on the wall, which the father discovers when he goes home after the play is opened and finds the writing wall, and then finds out really what happened, finds out the truth.
Well, it's a riveting couple of hours.
Oh, thanks,
and,
Tom.
You have some great performance. And Craig Spiedel's terrific.
Isn't he great?
Yeah. He's so good as that everyman, isn't he?
He is. Yeah. He is. But who really, you know, he brings so much emotional. He's such an emotional actor. And you know, I've followed Craig's work for years. And he, you know, he looks like how he looks, which is sort of, you know, like a real Chicago guy. And then he has this access to an emotional and interior life that's richer than anyone I know. I mean, it's just with the dart of an eye, you can feel so much pain and so much depth in that guy. And it's really surprising. Everything I see him in, I'm always blown away.
Yeah, me too. I think he's one of our long list of unsung hero actors in Chicago.
One of the best, of the really best. Yeah.
So, what's been the reaction to the play from audiences?
You know, audiences are really enthusiastic about it, and I have a lot of outside eyes that have come and helped me with it, and they've been really, I mean, the people who get into it are becoming sort of fanatical about the play, which is exciting.
Yeah,
you know, people are coming back and seeing it again, and the audience response is really good. I had my friend Moises Kaufman come. I know 521 when it's
on the lesson number three.
Yeah, Moises came the other night, and we just had this amazing conversation. He said it was like being inside in a living M.C. Escher painting.
Wow!
Because like, you know, it's just like, you know, that he really, you know, that the twists and turns of it are if you enter into it and understand it, it's you know, really fun. It's like being in a fun house. So that response has been great. You know, the critical response has been perplexing to me. It's been all over the map, from huge raves to you know, some swipes that I would disagree with, but you know.
Well, you're on a level now where you can be a target.
People, you know, I definitely knew. I was talking to Martha Levy about it, when I wanted to do it, and she said, you know, you're just putting a bullseye on your back by doing this. And I was like, well, you know, but it's what I have to do. I mean, I really felt compelled to do it. And
well, you've always been. You've got a history of being this gutsy director who's not afraid to break new ground.
You can't be. You have to try. You know, and I feel like I'm also at a point in my life where the reviews don't matter as much, in terms of I don't take my own reward from dramatic criticism. It's not like when there are raves I feel good, and when there are pans I feel bad. You know, it's important to me for the life of the play that people see it and that it has a life. But you know, everyone's going to have their own point of view. And some people, I was talking to my boyfriend about this, that. Sometimes you go to see plays and you are, if you're willing to be enchanted by it, you'll be enchanted by it. And if you go in not willing to be enchanted by it, you won't be, you know, and
that's
will look
right.
ugly and stupid.
I learned when I first started reviewing, and actually indirectly, I got this from Hedy Weiss, that if you go look to a play, if I go to a play looking for the good, quietly cheering, hoping, mm-hmm. hoping that it's good, that the writer was good and that your actors were good and you did a good job. I tend to see that, and maybe I can be a little forgiving on a few minor things here and there, but
nothing wrong with that.
No, right. And then I look at it from a consumer point of view, because they're looking to see a play and mm-hmm. they want a little guidance, or at least another point of view of should I go or not.
Yeah.
And I try and look for the audience for the play. That's why when I see something like your play that just blew me away, it was so good. You know, I told everyone, you've got to go see this.
Thank
play.
You.
Yeah.
It's really great. I mean, I think that's great. And one of the great, you know, I think the advent of podcasts and independent reviewers is so great for the theater, because we do get to hear from an audience perspective in a kind of more populist way. And I love the idea of criticism being something that is shared and communal, instead of, you know, some guy gets appointed to be the authority on the thing.
And thank God in Chicago now there's nobody that can really kill a play.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris is, and Hedy are certainly influential, but neither one can kill a play.
No, and plays, you know, we see in you know, my line of work, I follow what reviews do quite a lot, and word of mouth is everything now. And
yes, it is.
And I think internet resources are where we're seeing our biggest growth in audience, and where people really come to have the conversation with us about what we're doing. So, I think it's great.
Well, it's helped too. I mean, this podcast we're doing, thousands of people are listening now.
Thousands?
Yeah. I mean, well, With the downloads that we can dock it. Yeah, and I never thought it would work.
So cool.
But that's kind of my mission to give back when I see great pieces of art like you've created.
It's so great.
Well, let's go talk about your background.
Sure.
By the way, it is at Wedding Play. Gives a little commercial for it. It's at Steppenwolf Garage Theater. What days is it running?
It runs Wednesdays through Sundays. Wednesdays through Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 3 in the Steppenwolf Garage through December 2nd.
And it's an inexpensive ticket, right?
I think top ticket price is $35.
Yeah, and I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find anything better for that,
well,
that kind of money.
Well, thanks very much.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, About Face Theater.
Yes.
You're the co-founder. Tell us about that in your background. What the mission of About Face is.
About Face Theater was founded in 1995 by Kyle Hall and myself with a mission to create first-rate, really world-class new plays about gender and sexual identity. And we created the mission in 95, specifically as a gay and lesbian theater company with a new kind of identity. We wanted to be kind of bring the Chicago energy of high art, really sophisticated storytelling to the category of gay and lesbian theater. And the mission has evolved over the years, and now we say our mission is about the exploration of gender and sexual identity, really broadly construed as we've grown as artists and as the world has changed. And I think that our real identity now is as a new works theater that creates work that all focuses around these questions of the mysteries of gender and sexual identity, which everyone's got one.
Yeah, that's true.
Really for everyone.
Well, and I mean, you were involved in some absolutely wonderful theater district, I remember.
Yeah, what a great play.
Yeah, that was terrific. And in Winesburg, Ohio, I just thought was fabulous.
Oh, thanks.
Was a musical, too.
Yeah, I wrote the book and lyrics for that, and Jessica Thebus directed, and Andre Plus and Ben Sussman wrote the music.
What's happened to that play?
We had a tremendous production. Winesburg began its life as a one act at Steppenwolf for their Young Audiences program, and it was really enthusiastically received. And we created a two act version that was produced by About Face and Steppenwolf 4 years ago.
Yes, I remember it was fabulous.
Won a bunch of Jeff Awards and did really, really well. Then it went on to the National Alliance for Musical Theater Festival in New York, where it did great. And then it had a really amazing production at the Arden Theater in Philadelphia, where it also won all the local Philadelphia awards, Best Musical, Best New Work, Best Direction. I'm sure we'll talk about this, but it's going to be first on our season at the theater I'm going to be moving to, the Kansas City Repertory Theater, and hopefully get some new life after that.
Well, that's a reason to come to Kansas City.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
I love that play.
Thank you very much. It's one of my favorites.
I think it's going to have a life as a regional theater staple.
I hope so. It's a tough show in that it's like a lot of my plays. It's not depressing, but it's not musicals nowadays either have to be. Either have to have two characters or be really chipper and have a lot of tap dancing. And,
that's true.
And this has a big cast, and it's serious subject matter.
Very folksy, great score.
Beautiful score, yeah. All live played, guitar, folk music, banjo, violin, and piano. And really, I'm from rural North Carolina and was inspired, when we set out to write it by the kind of the real folk music that I grew up listening to. I'm actually related to the Carter family.
Are you really?
Yeah. So we always were listening to that kind of music and stuff. So
I was too.
And so, that's where that score came from. And it's really, it's a beautiful score. It's really terrific.
Any chance you think Broadway? Think it's a Broadway kind of show?
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm not sure either. But
I don't know. I mean, we'll see what, no one, things that work on Broadway, no one, the Young Frankenstein opened to terrible reviews and everyone thought that would work great.
$20 million bomb.
Oy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's great, but I haven't seen it. But, there's no such thing as a sure thing in the theater. And,
yeah, it's true.
And I think Winesburg is the kind of show everyone has enthusiasm for it who saw it. People still come up to me and say, 4 years later, I can't get this one song out of my head. Things like that are cool,
Did you guys do a cast album?
No.
Okay.
No. I hope we will for the new production will be pretty good production.
I hope you do, yeah. Because I'm sure that'll have legs.
Yeah, I hope so.
So let's go on now. I Am My Own Wife. You were involved with that.
Yeah. I was the original dramaturg, and About Face did the production. Did the world premiere, and it transferred from here to Playwrights Horizons and then went to Broadway and then won the Pulitzer, the Tony Award for Best Play, and then toured. It was the most performed play in America 2 years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I saw it at the Goodman, the production.
Yeah, we came right back here to Chicago. Yeah, after New York. And it was an amazing, really life-changing experience. I got that script in the mail. It had never been read both acts had never been read together. It would have been one act had been workshopped at Sundance, the other at La Jolla, with different directors and the same actor, Jefferson Mays, and it was it wasn't even typed in the same format, and it was so different. And then I fell in love with it, and I didn't really know Doug Wright, the playwright, or Moises Kaufman, the director, at that time very well. But I flew to New York and met with them. We instantly knew that we had a real, you know, that it was a making of a great relationship, and then we developed it and produced it. And it was just, if someone had told me at that time that play was going to make theater history in the way that it did, I never would have believed them. You know, I was just like, oh, this is some play by, you know, like any other play that we get. Certainly, the subject matter was fascinating and the artist pedigree was terrific. But it really set about face on a new course, and it really has defined my own career, recognizing that we really can make a difference with major projects and major artists, and have a national influence.
Yeah. And of course you're developing that kind of reputation. That's why I know Wedding Play will get, it'll get mounted in other places.
We'll see. We'll
yeah,
see. I hope so.
I'm sure of that. So. You did with Mary Zimmerman, the 11 Rooms of Proust.
Yeah. I did two plays with Mary about Proust, one called 11 Rooms of Proust and another called Monsieur Proust. And actually Kyle Hall and I, who I founded About Face with, met in Mary's Proust seminar in graduate school at Northwestern. So Proust and Mary have sort of haunted our lives for the last 15 years. And is a particular obsession of mine. I wrote about Proust in my doctoral dissertation. And that show, The 11 Rooms of Proust, was especially the coolest thing in the world. It was set in a 28,000 square foot warehouse over on Ravenswood, went room to room, and saw different scenes from Proust's 3,000 page epic Remembrances of Things Past in Mary's signature style. And it was this kind of like a crazy French literature haunted house.
Wow. I didn't see that, but I did see the other one and that Mary wrote.
Monsieur Proust.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I directed.
Yeah.
Mary,
which you
directed. Was the actress in it? Yeah.
How scary was that directing one of your mentors?
Can you imagine? It was. I remember when I first asked her if she would do it, if she would direct it. She said, "No, I don't think. You know, I don't really know how to do a one person play. You do know how to do one person plays. Why don't you direct it?" And you know, my heart stopped. I just couldn't believe it. And then, but it was really thrilling. I mean, I was with her through the kind of rewrites and the writing process, and then
how cooperative was she on that? I mean,
because
that's again, she's been a director, but it's a lot tougher when it's your work.
You know, I mean, well, during My Own Wife, Doug Wright said to me the only times that our distinctions in the theater are useful between playwrights and directors and dramaturgs is when we apply to graduate school. We all do everything, you know, and so Mary was certainly influential in the directing of that, and I was influential in the writing of it, and the actress Mary Beth Peel was influential in the crafting of it, you know. So we were all really collaborating.
Well, that's what the theater's really about.
Definitely, right? Definitely. And so it was a really, you know, give and take process. But all Mary's ideas, you know, she's brilliant. And well, on plays like that, I try just to stay out of the way and make it, you know, try to tell the story as well as I can and not try to.
Well, that was another major success.
Thank you.
So tell us what's going to happen now with About Face Theater.
Well, as it's probably known, as I said, I've been appointed the artistic director of Kansas City Rep, which is a Lort Theater in Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah, tell us, because Chicago people don't know that.
It's pretty large. It's one of the it's in the category of Lort B. The Lort theaters are now there are only two Lort A theaters in the country, and B is second highest and goes down to Lort D. So I think like the Court Theater is a Lort D theater.
Okay.
The Goodman, I think, is Lord B plus or Lord might be Lord A. So it's a theater much larger than ours. It has two spaces, a 650 seat main stage and a 300 seat studio theater, in a town that's really bustling and vital, and really coming alive. And I've directed there a couple of times. And the last time I directed down there, they asked me if I'd be interested in thinking about the artistic directorship. The then artistic director, Peter Altman, who was founding artistic director at the Huntington Theater Company in Boston, was retiring, so I started thinking about it and talking about it here, and somehow they picked me, and so
well,
I'm
congratulations.
Gonna do it. It's
yeah.
gonna be great. It's
yeah,
gonna be really terrific. Very bittersweet. You know, it's hard to leave Chicago, and it's only beginning to really dawn on me. You know, that it's real. I've been here 15 years.
Well, you think you'll be back to direct?
I'll be here all the time. I mean, I think that the Kansas City Rep job is gonna be great for Chicago artists, because we're going to turn our focus to casting Chicago actors, using Chicago designers and directors.
Well, I'll be glad to hear that.
Yeah, and I think it'll be a great source of employment for a lot of people here. And it's close, you know, and it's close. You can get back and forth. And I'll be here at About Face. You know, I'll continue my role as a founding artistic director. And, I'll probably do at least one play a year here. And we'll develop joint projects with Kansas City. And I really want to keep a presence in Chicago. It's very important to
me. Well, that's good to hear. Yeah. Well, but you've been the national director for a number of years now.
Well, I hope so. I'm trying
with the body of work you're doing, and so you're going to be doing what kind of plays are you going to be doing there?
Well, the cool thing about it that'll be exciting for me is we'll do new work in Kansas City, but we'll also do, you know, what regional theaters need to do. We'll do classics. We'll do Shakespeare. I've never directed Shakespeare, and I'm excited. You know, I can't really get hired to direct Shakespeare in Chicago, for there is much competition among very esteemed Shakespeare directors.
Yeah, we have a few good ones.
Yeah, yeah. So it's going to be great, you know, to sharpen my skills in things I don't get to do here. And even when I get hired to direct at theaters around the country, it's usually to do plays like I already do, you know, new work, work with kind of unique or strange viewpoints, or, you know, unusual storytelling is what I specialize in, and so that's what I get hired to do. So I'm really excited to get to do Chekhov and Shakespeare and O'Neill and Arthur Miller, you know, things that I just can't do in Chicago, and at the same time keep what I'm passionate about going in Chicago.
So it's an expansion of your art, and you have a larger platform.
Yeah, it'll be great. It'll be really cool. And, you know, it'll be very different being in a theater community of, you know, a few hundred people instead of a few thousand, you know, and there are six nonprofit theaters in Kansas City as compared to the 250 in Chicago. You know, it's going to be really, that part will be very strange to be sort of the top dog in a different city.
But, well, I think you're ready for it.
I think it'll be great.
You look like you're up for the challenge.
Cool. You know, just even right now I'm planning next season. I'm starting to get, you know, and just knowing that, you know, what I want to do is what we're going to do. And that's really a dream come true. I think it's going to be terrific.
That's great. Well, this has been a terrific interview, and you've had a lot to say. Last thing, what advice would you give to young director playwrights?
Well, you know, in Chicago, the people ask me all the time, how do you have a directing career? And I know more about that than I know. How to have a writing career is different. But I think, so I can speak more to how to have
a directing career.
Three things. One, you have to be amazing to work with all the time. Meaning you have to be the best assistant director. You have to go after and get opportunities to be the best person who's going to sweep the floors. The way in is always to apprentice to an organization or an artist that you really admire and to be amazing. And then second, you have to get your work done. And if that means getting eight friends together and going to a park district and doing a night of readings, if that means, holding as many bake sales as possible to get a production of your play up, the thing that you're most passionate about doing, you have to do it. No one's going to hire you until you hire yourself. And I think being a director really means believing that your point of view is worth everything, and you're going to fight like hell to get it out there. And then having having the charisma to get people to be foolish enough to hire you once you've proven that you can, you know, get reviewed and get your work seen. Those three things I think are really at the core of every director who's successful I know possesses those, has gone through those three things.
Yeah, that's true. That's great advice. And I'm sure a lot of people need to know, right? Because they think because in their mind they're a director, that therefore they are.
And there are a lot of great, there are people who have great stage craft who don't have the kind of wherewithal to gather the resources to do it. And there are people who have the resources to do it who don't have the talent or the vision. You know, there are so few opportunities for people to work in the theater at all. And, you know, they're always, you know, they're usually 8-15 actors in a play, 2-8-15. There's only one director.
That's right.
And it's the most competitive, of the kind of the laboring force.
And they talk about it, you know, film and television more of a director's meeting. I think in theater, the director is the key.
Well, true in Chicago. You know, I think what's great about Chicago is a director's town. People used to be an actor's town, and actors are still critical. But I think in Chicago, directors have a lot of creative authority. In New York is a playwright's town, but Chicago is a director's town.
Well, that's great to hear. And thank you so much. And I wish you the best of luck. And congratulations on Wedding Play.
It was Thanks, Tom,
absolutely
very much.
Terrific. Folks, go see Wedding Play and make sure that you go see a play this week. Thank you for listening.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of November 19th, 2007. Chicago has a new holiday tradition to look forward to this season. Victory Gardens Biograph Theater presents the return of Hans Christian Andersen's beloved winter tale, The Snow Queen, starting this November 30th. The Snow Queen, which debuted last year, is a mythical world of fantasy and dream conceived by Chicago folk music legend Michael Smith, Tony Award-winning director Frank Galati, and master puppeteer Blair Thomas and Company. The show quickly became one of the biggest hits in Victory Gardens' 33-year history and will soon be everyone's favorite new holiday institution. The smash hit musical begins November 30th and runs through December 23rd. Tickets are available through victorygardens.org. You can also click on to Talk Theater in Chicago's archives for an in-depth interview with Michael Smith from when the show debuted. The Goodman Theater's 30th anniversary of A Christmas Carol celebrates a time-honored Chicago holiday tradition that's been enjoyed by thousands of families. Seven directors have helmed Dickens' novella over the past 30 years, and this year sees the returning of William Brown for his second season as director. Larry Ando makes his Goodman debut as the production's seventh Ebenezer Scrooge. You may remember him from his recent role of Cymbeline at the Chicago Shakes. Tickets for A Christmas Carol are available right now and may be purchased online at goodmantheater.org. For more information on past Scrooges, directors, as well as this year's current cast, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Live Nation, the world's largest live music company, has decided to sell its 50% stake in Broadway in Chicago for $60 million to James L. Niederlander. James L. Niederlander is affiliated with the Niederlander Organization, who happens to own the other 50% of Broadway in Chicago. Stakes in the Oriental Theater will be included in the sale as well. The Niederlander name started with David T. Niederlander back in the early 1900s. The company now has presence nationally, internationally, and is the proud owner of 9 Broadway theaters. In Chicago, the new partnership between the Niederlander Organization and James L. Niederlander will now control Broadway in Chicago along with the historic LaSalle Bank, Oriental, and Cadillac Palace theaters. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before I let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from Hamlet, Act 2, Scene 2. The play's the thing. Well, here we are at the end of another Theater News Week and the beginning of another. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to sit back, relax, and enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the Theater News from Talk Theater in Chicago. And I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Eric Rosen for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And I would also like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.